Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug? Ignored a leaky faucet? Pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look that way? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects. Whether it's a door that sticks, or a disorganized closet, or an AC unit that only works half the time. It all matters. You just haven't taken care of it yet. But there's an easier way. Just download the Thumbtack app. You can search for what you need done and find tons of highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Check prices, reviews, and book a pro right on the spot. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Welcome back, everybody, to Fantasy Football Today, DFS. I am your host, IMC Anajad. We're continuing our offseason series, but we're only 58 days away from kickoff. That's Kansas City and Detroit, Thursday night football. I have a special guest with me. You heard him here last year on this very show, on this very podcast, Fantasy Football Today, DFS guest, TJ Hernandez at TJ Hernandez. TJ, you are the director of DFS at 4for4. 4for4.com is where you can find his work. You can also find him at BetSports Media. 58 days away, TJ, that's got to sound, it's starting to sound like music to your ears, right?
Yeah, man, I've been on this best ball grind all offseason, so that's been my main focus, getting my fix now. But I'm sure within, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks, we're probably getting some DFS salaries dropping. It's usually the last week of July, I think. So, yeah, I'm itching for some DFS action finally.
That's going to be really cool. And I'll tell everybody, we're gonna you know, listen. We're going to talk about regression candidates. TJ, he writes a lot for 4for4.com, and you can find all of his stuff there. We're going to tap into some of the stuff he wrote about, some of the outlier sort of statistical players from 2022 and what that means for 2023. So we're going to get into that. But at the end of the show, we're actually going to talk a little bit about the DFS main slate. No, we don't have salaries, but it will be fun to just sort of speculate based on totals and things of that nature, the teams involved, where people will likely go on the main slate. Maybe you want to play just the early slate. Maybe you want to just do the afternoon slate. Maybe you want to do the main slate. Either way, we're just going to tap into that a little bit at the end of the show. There certainly will always be a DFS tie-in. But before we get to your regression candidates, TJ, I do want to say, you know, this show, Fantasy Football Today, DFS, it's only 2 years old. We're only going into year three in 2023. And there's another kid on the block, another new show that's coming right to you, and we're adding it. It's the Fantasy Football Today family adding another show with a brand new podcast called Fantasy Football Today Dynasty. Join our pal from FFT, Heath Cummings, and a cast of characters as they aim to help you dominate your Dynasty League. Support the FFT team by following Fantasy Football Today Dynasty on Apple, Spotify, or wherever podcasts are found. Well, TJ, I want to get right into it. And everybody in the chat, thank you for being here. I see you, Jay Metz. I see you, Eliard Anderson. Hopefully I pronounced that right. We want to talk about some of the content you've put up at 4for4, some regression candidates. And I'd love to, if it's okay with you, I'd love to go by position. You have some guys that, you know, are regression candidates, and that can be a confusing term to some people because we're talking about regressing to the mean, right, TJ?
Yep. Yeah, I could give a little background on the methodology, if you like, before we hop into the positions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this is a touchdown focus regression analysis that I do every year. And it's kind of what I think it's an improvement on things like touchdown rate or things like red zone opportunities. Just gives a little more context to these numbers. Obviously, touchdowns are a huge driver of fantasy scoring. But what I've done over the past 5 or 6 years is take every single play for the whole season, look at where that play started, look at the line of scrimmage, and then what kind of play that is per position, and assign touchdown expectations. So, for example, a pass from inside the 5 yard line has a 45% touchdown rate. A running back target from the opponent's 11 to the 15 has a 12% touchdown rate. So I apply all of those numbers across every position, every field position, to every player, and see which players scored the most above expectation, which players scored the least above expectation. And historically, we've had a lot of success in these players on the upper end seeing fewer touchdowns the following year, players on the lower end seeing more touchdowns, assuming that they get the continued workload. And it really gives us an idea of which players we might be targeting as sleepers, and which players we might be overhyping, because maybe, you know, touchdowns, there's a lot of luck involved. There's a lot of run good involved. And when those numbers do regress, sometimes these players are a little bit more average than we expect.
So there's a couple names on your quarterback list. And we'll talk about, just so everybody knows, we're going to talk about quarterbacks, running backs. We'll touch on wide receivers and tight ends as well before we get into that early look at some of the DFS main slate. But there's a couple quarterbacks on your QB list in terms of positive expectations, right? You have some negative expectations too in terms of regression to the mean. But a couple of the names really intrigued me, one in particular. Mm-hmm. But let's start with Kenny Pickett. I want to get to the next one, but I want to start with Kenny Pickett. Why would he be a regression candidate in terms of having positive expectations?
Yeah, just in terms of the number of touchdowns he scored, his expected touchdown number was actually 17. He only ended up throwing 7 touchdowns, and there was a lot going into that. For one, we had Pickett thrown into a situation where they weren't expecting him to start right away. They had Trubisky starting. Ended up Trubisky was a lot worse than they were hoping for. Forced Pickett into a situation where he had to start quicker than expected behind a very bad offensive line. And then where Pickett really struggled was inside the red zone. Only of the 26 quarterbacks with at least 20 red zone attempts, Pickett was the only one with a single-digit touchdown rate inside the red zone. We did see some improvement from Pickett just as a passer in general. Over his first 3 starts, 4.32 yards, adjusted yards per attempt. Over his final 7 starts, that jumped to 6.68, which is still slightly below average, but better than those bottom of the barrel numbers we were seeing. So we did see some improvement. The Steelers did add a first-round tackle, and I think second year in Matt Canada's system, familiarization with the offense, consistent pass catching core. If he scores as expected with a full year of pass attempts, if he improves on that red zone rate, I would put Pickett in that like high end expectation of somewhere in the 25 touchdown range.
Yeah. And I like what you said about, it makes sense, right? That, you know, what he's coming in a little earlier than expected when it comes to Mitch Trubisky sort of leaving the field as a starter. And obviously there's going to be growing pains early. And so the mm-hmm. fact that you saw a trend sort of later in the season with respect to Kenny Pickett, that obviously bodes well with a full off season going into year 2 in Matt Canada's system. I mean, that is part of the thesis statement right there, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So this next guy I'm really excited about, because there were so many things working against Justin Herbert. Outside of what you're going to talk about, which was just simply the touchdowns weren't as high as they probably should have been, which you're going to touch on in a second. But there were so many other things that we'll get to in a second when it comes to Justin Herbert in terms of things working against him in 2022. But tell me why he's a positive expectation regression candidate in 2023.
Yeah, with all these guys, I'm starting with the math of the expectation. If we look at Justin Herbert's 25 touchdowns, that was 9 below expectations based on all of his pass attempts and where they came from on the field and historical pass grade numbers. He should have thrown 34 touchdowns. That would have made him finish as the QB5. And where these players would have finished, that drives the narrative so much, right? Because Herbert was going as the QB2 in redraft leagues last year, ended as a QB11. So a lot of disappointment there outside of where the passes came from, outside of actual passing rate. I mean, there's other drivers that can point us to a player regressing in the right direction. Herbert was 2nd in pass attempts, 2nd in passing yards. Those things typically coincide with higher passing numbers. He just had really bad luck. He was a little unhealthy. He had 2 receivers that missed multiple time. And on top of that, like, we don't talk about Herbert as a rushing quarterback. He was one of 14 signal callers that had at least 50 rush attempts. He was the only one in that group that didn't have a rushing touchdown. So yeah, he's not going to go out there and, you know, rush for 50 yards every game and give you 10 scores. But I mean, if we get three or four rushing touchdowns out of Herbert instead of zero, and he comes in on the high end of his expected passing touchdown number, if he has, you know, if it's a big overcorrection and he comes in at like 37 or 38 passing touchdowns, this is a guy that could compete for the QB1 with this new offense, with a new rookie in Quentin Johnson, with a new offensive coordinator in Kellen Moore, whose offenses were top six in scoring three of his 4 years in Cowboys. There are a lot of things pointing in the right direction for the Chargers, and particularly for Herbert. Of course, got the great pass catching back as well.
Yeah, and when you talk about the rushing touchdowns, I mean, part of all of this, when it comes to Justin Herbert, I'm trying to think of, well, okay, let's build off of a couple things. What would his season have been if the rib cartilage injury hadn't happened basically at the beginning of the season? Because that really hampered him. He probably should have rested way longer than he did. It probably hampered him the entire season. But then you got Slater and Lindsley injuries on the offensive line. Now, the offensive lines get injured all the time, so that's not necessarily an outlier thing. But those are two really important pieces that were missing. Keenan Allen, I think people forget, he missed pretty much half the season. Yeah. I mean, there were about seven games he's flat out didn't play, a couple more games where he was, you know, clearly injured during the game. And you mentioned Mike Williams injured too. So, you know, some of these things are going to happen in an NFL season. You can't really account for them. But the rib cartilage injury, the offensive line injuries, the injuries to your primary receivers. I mean, the fact that he was able to do what he was able to do is actually really impressive. And if these people stay healthy, and you add Quentin Johnson to the mix, you add Kellen Moore to the mix, man, I agree with you, TJ. Justin Herbert seems like a sky-high candidate who, for the record, to your point, might rush a little bit more than anybody expects. Not that he's a rushing quarterback, but still.
Yeah, no, he'll give you random games where he'll give you 30 and one on the ground, and that obviously goes a really, really long way.
So this next guy is really interesting to me because, and again, everybody can find this at 444.com. TJ has all of this laid out, including kind of the statistical deep dive that sort of predicates all of these names. Matthew Stafford is interesting to me as a sort of a positive, and forgive me if I'm using the wrong terms here. I'm saying positive expectations relative to 2022, relative to the mean, you know, what have you. So, you know, Stafford is just, like, I don't think anybody's going to want to touch the Rams in general. I mean, obviously Cooper Kupp, you know, Cam Akers, but the Rams in general, I think, you know, obviously vibes are low. Nobody's expecting them to win many games. Tell me what you're seeing with Matthew Stafford.
Sure. I mean, this isn't an offense that I think we're buying a ton of. Stafford isn't a guy like Kenny Pickett might be a guy that we're, you know, if you're in a redraft league and you really miss out on the, you know, the top 10 or 11 guys, you're taking that 12 quarterback off the board. Maybe Pickett's there, but him and Stafford both I think are more likely going to be, if they do hit, early season waiver wire candidates in your typical 12 team league. I don't think they're guys we're going to be drafting, but, you know, keep an eye on early in the year, be ahead of the crowd on the waiver wire. Stafford came into last year with an elbow injury that everybody knew about, and for whatever reason we all kind of said, you know, maybe it's not as bad. Still ended up going as a top 12 quarterback, struggled with that, ended up hurting his neck, missing half the season. Even when he was active, only threw 10 touchdowns, should have been around that 15 mark. Someone I like guys like Stafford, or at least guys with some kind of significant history, because it's not like Kenny Pickett. We have 1 year to draw on. We have a long history of Matthew Stafford being consistently above average in terms of touchdown rate. In his first year with the Rams, touchdown rate is way up near 7%. Now, you're not going to sustain that every year, but down at 3.3%, that's just not what we typically get from Matthew Stafford. Cooper Kupp should be coming into the year healthy. This is an offense that just really struggled all around last year. So I think just Stafford getting a full healthy offseason, you know, having cut back, I think that he should be at least slightly above average again.
What's interesting too is just from a DFS standpoint, I want everybody to keep in mind, like, these are guys that are, you know, especially when it comes to Stafford and Pickett and Herbert to a degree, because, you know, everybody's going to want to play like the true rushing quarterbacks that have some upside with their arm as well. I mean, Jalen Hurts comes to mind. Like, there are going to be opportunities where, especially early in the DFS season, where for one, nobody's going to be playing Kenny Pickett. So depending on the matchup, oh, and by the way, Matthew Stafford, He's in a high total game week one on the main slate. They play at the Seahawks. It's a 47-point total. That's certainly a contrarian candidate for the main slate because nobody's going to want to play Matthew Stafford. But even Justin Herbert, you know, given what we saw from him as the QB11 last year, TJ, he is the type of guy from a DFS standpoint that I want to be targeting in the first few weeks before people realize, hey, there were so many things mitigating such a great season from him. And so I think contextually, you want to keep this in mind for redraft and all of these other things. But DFS-wise, especially guys like Pickett and Stafford, but even Herbert to a degree, these are guys that might be a little lower owned than people expect. I mean, week one, that's not going to be the case, right? Because the Dolphins play the Chargers week one. It's a 50-point total. It's the highest total on the main slate. Still, there are going to be games where Herbert's probably lower owned. Go ahead, TJ.
Yeah, I think one of the early season advantages to people that are doing a lot of best ball drafts are just doing a lot of offseason research are we have a pretty good idea of who we think our breakout candidates are going to be or who our underrated redraft players are going to be. And a lot of times those end up being low salary DFS guys. So they are, you know, sometimes week one feels like a complete crapshoot. We don't know what's going on with new offices, new coordinators. Just simply looking at some of these guys that we expect to have breakout years or bounce back years can be early season DFS targets for sure.
All right. And let's talk about a couple of quarterbacks that maybe have some negative expectations, at least relative to what they produced from a touchdown standpoint last year. And the first one, it's Tua. Talk to me about Tua.
Do you mind if we talk about both these guys together? Because I think they actually had really similar years, and I think their most likely trends are a little bit different.
Yeah, actually, I was actually going to group them together, and I decided to go one-on-one. So yeah, actually, that's probably the better way anyway. Let's go.
Yeah, just because with the way that they both ran, both Tua and Geno Smith, they both ran really good in terms of deep passes. Tua had 8 touchdowns over 40 yards. Geno had 13 touchdowns over 30 yards. And those long scores, whether it be passing scores for the quarterbacks or receiving or rushing scores for the other positions, they're typically not sticky. We typically see the usage stick really well. But those long scores are very high variance year to year. So Tua ran super hot last year, should have had about 17 touchdowns based on expectation through 25. Geno had 23, threw for 30. Tua threw for a super high touchdown rate, over 6%. We typically don't see that repeating. And even with Tua running super hot, he was the QB9 in terms of point per game when he played at least 70% of the snaps. If we just look in terms of the offensive changes, the upside for Tua is pretty obvious. He has two of the most dynamic receivers in the league. But Miami, I mean, they drafted a running back, but most of their upgrades this year came on defense, whereas Seattle invested a lot more in the pass game. Drafted JSN, drafted a pass-catching running back in Zach Charbonnet, have two tackles that a lot of people forget were rookies last year, but only missed one combined start. Offensive line continuity, especially at those tackle positions, is huge for offense. So Seattle's offensive line struggled last year. I think they could be a lot better this year, brought in a new center as well. So I think Geno could have really good protection this year. And I mean, they just invested in their passing game. So if one of these quarterbacks is more likely to sustain their season, I actually like it to be Geno, where I think the consensus is people are expecting it to be Tua.
Yeah, that makes sense. I want to ask you sort of off script a little bit. When it comes to the NFC West, I mean, we talked about the Rams. I don't think they have any shot to win the NFC West. Arizona, I can safely say, has no shot to win the NFC West. Yeah. When you look at the numbers, I think last I checked, you had the Niners at like minus 150. And I think the Seattle Seahawks were somewhere in like I can't remember what it was, but plus it was certainly a plus number, a pretty healthy plus number. Do you think Seattle can contend for the NFC West?
Niners are really good, man.
Yeah, I don't. Like, I think Seattle's good, but I don't think, regardless of who's at quarterback, which I expect it to be Brock Purdy, I think it's the Niners division because of it's just a head-to-head matchup, really.
I think their offense is going to be really fun. Pete Carroll, we thought he was never going to open up the pass game, and then Seattle's all of a sudden 8th in passing rate over expectation last year. I think that continues, so they could be a really fun team. I don't know if they could hold a candle to the Niners this year.
Yeah, agree with that. All right. Well, listen, we got to talk about some regression candidates at the running back position. But before we do that, let's hear a message from our partners.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
We are back. This is Fantasy Football Today, DFS, and I'm with TJ Hernandez, the director of DFS at 4for4.com. Running backs, we got a couple here with negative expectations, or I should say positive, and then a few with negative ones. And I think the negative ones are going to be really controversial with respect to maybe one or two of them. I'm a big fan of really both the guys you have in the positive category. Where do you want to start?
We could start right at the top with Travis Etienne. I think he's a super interesting player just because of what people thought they were going to get out of him and what he provided. But I think when we dig into the numbers, the narrative might be a little bit wrong.
Fair enough. Tell me about it.
Yeah, the big thing with Etienne is people were expecting this huge passing game roll out of him, right? And we just didn't get it. And he actually matched his ADP last year. I believe he was drafted as the RB16 and finished as RB16. I might be off by one or two spots depending on scoring system there. But the pass game work wasn't there. What it doesn't account for is that his five total touchdowns should have been nine total touchdowns. And if he hits that expectation, we're looking at an RB12 finish for Etienne. And like I said, so much of the narrative is driven off of how a player finished last year. Etienne is coming off of a year where he finishes an RB1. I think there's a lot more hype around him. I think we might see, you know, maybe a round higher ADP on him. Among running backs that are currently on a roster, only five had more opportunities inside the 10-yard line than Travis Etienne last year. He just didn't convert all of them. And again, that's a very high variance number. Those touchdown rates tend to swing back to normal pretty often. This is an offense that a lot of people are expecting to continue to trend up. Got Calvin Ridley to join their receiving corps now. We know Trevor Lawrence is ascending. I want running backs that are going to be on explosive offenses. And sure, maybe Etienne isn't going to be this 70, 80 target guy that we're hoping for. But if we expect this offense to have a lot of scoring opportunity, a lot of times that scoring opportunity means sustained drives and short, easy touchdowns for the running backs, more running back opportunity. Etienne's competing with touches with a guy that is a perennial backup in Dearness Johnson and Tank Bigsby, who's a rookie that I like, but not a ton of draft capital where I think they're going to feel like they need to get him playing again. So he's had an over 60% touch share last year. I don't see any reason why Etienne doesn't match that touch share, maybe even exceed it. And if his touchdowns normalize, we're looking at a player that finishes as a top 10 running back.
I think that's the key here, what you said about the touch share, because even if we think Tank Bigsby, and he is kind of a tank, by the way, his actual name is not Tank, it's Cartavius, if anybody wanted to know that, although Tank is certainly a fitting name for him. But even if he gets some of the goal line work, because you got to think they invested in him to some degree because of the inefficiency from Etienne, maybe inside the 10, inside the 5, but even if Bigsby gets some of that, Etienne's going to get some of that too. But between the 20s, I feel like Etienne's going to get, like, not all of it, but certainly more than 60%. I feel like even if you think Bigsby as a rookie carves out a role, which is, you know, questionable,
sure,
it's all going to otherwise it's it all seems like it's going to Travis. I don't think Dearness Johnson is a guy that's really going to do anything other than spell Travis Etienne when he's hurt, for example.
Absolutely. Yeah, right. I like Etienne a lot. And I think he's a – I mean, I wouldn't say necessarily a hedge because he's not going super late, but a lot of people are just hyping up the offense, and I think you can get a lot of the offense through the running back this year.
So speaking of a lot of the offense through the running back, I look at the New England Patriots and I think, all right, how does Ramondre Stevenson not get, like, all the work? Because behind him, it just looks bare. Like, I don't Pierre Strong, like Ty Montgomery. I don't even know really where we're going at the second and third running back position. We know Damian Harris is gone. Ramondre is somebody you really like. Talk about it.
Yeah, Ramondre only scored 6 touchdowns last year. Obviously, he was a beast through the pass game with 88 targets, but he was very similar to ETN in that both had at least 20 opportunities. That's targets plus rushes inside the 10-yard line. There were 18 other players to hit that 20 opportunity mark inside the 10-yard line. They were the only two with fewer than 5 touchdowns. So Stevenson is getting the requisite work near the goal line. I know a lot of people think, oh, Damian Harris was the pounder last year, which people just automatically equate with goal line work. But Stevenson was getting a lot of work inside the 10-yard line. I would expect him to continue to get that work. He is obviously a safer bet than ETN because he is getting that passing game work that we didn't see from ETN. The only little bit of pause, and I don't think we need to have too much pause, is that Bill O'Brien is going to be calling plays again this year. He has struggled as an offensive coordinator before. But, I mean, with Harris gone, they already released James Robinson. I just don't see a hurdle other than that the Patriots do have the most difficult schedule in the league in terms of opponent expected win total. So they could get into some negative game scripts. They could see some spots where Stevenson doesn't get the touchdown upside that we're hoping for, but he has a safety net with his pass catching. So again, if that touchdown normalizes, he's being drafted high, top 10 running back in ADP. I think he has a chance to pretty easily match that.
I like that. Okay, so it's the negative expectation guys. Again, this is all relative, right, to 2022 that I think are going to have some eyes, you know, wide open a little bit. And I'm going to start with a guy who's coming off an injury, but, you know, seems like he's trending fine off of that injury that I think a lot of people are going to be in love with. And I wonder, and we're talking about Tony Pollard, and I wonder how you want to couch this. Is the negative expectation relative to the 2022 numbers, or is it relative to his ADP, or both?
No, I think it's relative to his touchdown expectation only. I think with Tony Pollard, we're like he can he had a huge gap in his expectation versus actual touchdowns. Should have been between 6 and 7 touchdowns based on where all of his touches came from. Scored 12. With that said, a lot of that is going to be made up for in volume. He's not going to be splitting work with Zeke. I think with Pollard compared to the other guys around him, we're so excited about Paul, right? He's been this uber efficient back that we've been waiting to get a full workload. When he has, he's absolutely blown up. He's won tournaments for people last year. I think this expectation that we talk about range of outcomes, I think it's a lot wider than some people might be giving Pollard credit for. So many of his runs came from long range, 8 from outside the 10-yard line, which doesn't seem long, but just not a lot of running back scores come from outside the 10-yard line. 5 touchdowns of at least 30-plus yards. As I mentioned with quarterbacks, those long touchdowns are really hard to repeat. Now, most of the work inside the 10 went to Zeke, especially on the ground. Zeke is gone. Maybe they bring him back. That's probably the biggest question mark for Tony Pollard right now. Do they start training camp and then bring in Zeke? That could really hurt his touchdown expectation. Cowboys O-line, always very good. Other concern, we got Mike McCarthy versus Kellen Moore. A lot of people are going to say, oh, McCarthy wants to feed running back the rock. That's a good thing. Tony Pollard's touches are going to go through the roof. Sure, but if they're a super inefficient team in terms of scoring, that's also very concerning. So there's a lot of push and pull with Tony Pollard. The positives are very obvious. I just think the range of outcomes are a lot wider than people are expecting.
Yeah, fair enough. I definitely understand that argument. The next guy is really interesting to me, and I want to lead with just some of what I see when it comes to Austin Ekeler, because you have him, you know, especially with regard to what we're talking about really is the touchdown expectations here. 18 total touchdowns last year, which is obviously a ton. But I think a lot of his work in general, if we just like reach outside of the touchdowns and we look at his receptions, 107 receptions on 127 targets.
Yep.
Would you agree with me that a lot of that was attributed to the injuries across the offensive line and in the wide receiver room, and that he was just like by just sort of the guy by process of elimination that was just getting a lot of those targets because there weren't a lot of other people there that Herbert could rely on?
Yes and no. I mean, to the extent that he was getting them, I would say yes. But in terms of relative to the rest of the league, we have a lot of evidence that Austin Eckler is a guy that can handle a lot of high value touches. And when I say high value touches, I mean targets and touches inside the 10-yard line. He was pretty much in the same position last year where he scored way over expectation, and then he didn't bounce back. He scored over expectation again. And this is where I think it's really important if people you know, don't just look at the tweet or who the names are in the article, but actually to read this process, because this is a really important one, and it's why I call it touchdown expectation. Because Austin Eckler, as long as he's the starting running back for the Chargers, he's been at or near the top of the league in terms of touchdown expectation. So this is a player with the work he's given, he can regress to the mean and still pay off his RB3 ADP. Mm-hmm. So I included him for that very reason. 13 expected touchdowns is a lot. The only other guy that's seen those type of numbers last year was Jamal Williams. And Jamal Williams is another guy that's another great example of this process and why I go through this process every single year. Because if you don't, you might look at someone like Jamal Williams and say, he scored 17 or 18 times. You just can't repeat that every year. Maybe not, but his touchdown expectation was actually exactly where it was supposed to be. Austin Eckler is one of those guys. He's getting these high value touches. Sure, he scored over, but I think he's a fair value where he's going. I think he might not repeat as RB1, but I think top three or four RB is very, very safe for Eckler. I think he's one of the best running backs, most high value running backs in the league.
All right. And the last guy, I feel like this is one where I take issue with it, because it's Nick Chubb. And I just think, I mean, I can't tell you, TJ, how many times, because I do a prop show with part of the CBS Sports Network with Prop Stars and Dave Richard from Fantasy Football Today, Jonathan Coachman, the coach. And I can't tell you how many times, middle of the season, towards the end of the season, where I was just like, Nick Chubb's over in rushing yards. And it would keep going up, and he'd keep clipping it. And with Kareem Hunt gone, and I understand Kareem Hunt really wasn't much of a force last season for the Browns, but it just seems to me that, like, with Kareem Hunt gone, maybe Nick Chubb, maybe the receptions tick up a little bit, maybe the opportunities for touchdowns tick up, especially with some of the guys on the outside that they've added, like Elijah Moore and, you know, Deshaun maybe being better this year. But what is the reason that Nick Chubb shows up on the list in a negative way?
Yeah, the only reason he shows up here is just because he scored so far over expectation. He scored 5 touchdowns over expectation. Should have been at 8, was at 13. And this goes for all three of these guys. Since beginning of 2019, we've had 9 other running backs besides these three score at least 5 touchdowns over expectation. The following year, they've seen their touchdown total drop by an average of 7 touchdowns. Obviously, if Chubb's drops by 7, he's at 6, so he's probably, you know, still in that running back 8 or 9 range, given his workload. He's just a back like Chubb is just always a concern, because he's not going to give you a lot in the passing game. And he's going to finish as he's going to finish as a top 10 running back, even if he has a bad rushing year. Players like Chubb can be frustrating. He wasn't much last year, can be frustrating, because like these 80 yards and 0 touchdown games are always in his range of outcomes. Mm-hmm. So his end of season numbers are going to look good. He's going to have games where he's going to sink you. You know, if you're playing on DraftKings, he's going to give you a little bit more cushion, because you're going to get that 100-yard bonus a lot of times when he doesn't get his touchdown. But be cautious. Think about how the offense is going to look. Is Deshaun Watson going to go back to, you know, he's been a premier rushing quarterback in the league before. Are they going to be a better passing team this year? Is that going to hurt Chubb? I think he's going to be fine. It's just throw up just one of these little red flags. We want to be doing our due process. He did run very good last year in terms of touchdown rate.
Totally fair. Totally understand that. So here's the thing. Your wide receiver article, it's not out yet. Your tight end article is not out yet on 444.com. You're about to publish these things. But I figured, well, why not just, like, we don't have to go through the whole process, but maybe you give us, let's talk about the wide receivers, for example, maybe a sneak peek of maybe a couple of names, literally maybe a couple, too, that might show up in that next article.
Sure. Start with wide receivers if you'd like.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy that scored the highest over expectation last year was Tyler Lockett. And that's not a surprise. Every single year are guys that are quarterbacks that are the highest or lowest relative to expectation are almost always going to have pass catchers that are highest or lowest over expectation. Tyler Lockett scored 9 touchdowns last year. His expectation was 4.2. Now, Tyler Lockett, similar to a guy like Austin Eckler, he's proven that he can consistently score above expectation. He's a very efficient receiver, very good at what he does. Tyler Lockett, for me, is an opportunity to look at the Seattle offense as a whole and kind of dig into what we think they can do. A lot of people look at the drafting of JSN, look at Charbonnet, and kind of say, we're not sure how targets are going to play out. If we do some digging, I think we can kind of get an idea of what the Seattle offense is going to look like. Now, even though they threw at a top 10 rate over expectation last year, they were very limited in how they can do that. They ran three wide receiver sets at one of the lowest rates in the league. JSN's going to give them the ability to spread out that offense and continue to throw at a high rate. Zach Charbonnet is going to give them a running back out of the backfield. Ken Walker's fine. Zach Charbonnet is way better out of the backfield. Now, with Tyler Lockett specifically, and why I do think he can regress, is because if we look at the profile of Lockett, look at the profile of Jackson Smith and Jigba, both are players that can play as flankers and as slot wide receivers. Neither of them are going to be great on the line, especially JSN. That is going to be a role where now DK can comfortably play the X, play on the line of scrimmage. That's going to be his designated role. Tyler Lockett and JSN most likely bounce back and forth between the Z and the slot. And for that reason, they're going to have a lot of shared targets, a lot of shared opportunities. Tyler Lockett on the wrong side of 30, JSN, one of the better route runners coming out of the draft. I think by the end of the year, either can have, obviously, if they're both healthy, I think they could both have these huge splash games. With rookie JSN being the top receiver in the draft, with Lockett on the wrong side of 30, I think it could be a situation where by those playoff weeks, we see JSN be the player that's popping. And for the simple fact that they're going to be sharing a role. I think they're going to have a lot of ambiguous weeks where DK is just steadily holding down that X.
Yeah, Tyler Lockett turns 31 in September. It sounds to me, and I would agree with this if the answer was yes, but feel free to disagree. It sounds to me like DK Metcalf is somebody that you really like this year.
Yeah, and it's when we look at redraft or best ball, a lot of people will simply look at ADP and say, DK is going way earlier than Lockett and JSN. Lockett has outscored him before. Lockett's the obvious value. I look at the roles and look at DK and how he plays. And like I said, look at Tyler Lockett and JSN likely splitting these roles. And if this offense continues, if Geno Smith continues the efficiency that we saw last year for the reasons that I laid out, I really think that DK has a top 5 or 6 year in his range of outcomes this year. I don't think Lockett and JSN have that in the range of outcomes. Sure, Lockett can finish as, you know, the wide receiver 13 again, but does he have a wide receiver 12 or wide receiver, you know, 5 or 6 in his range of outcomes? I don't think so. Not if he's switching back and forth with JSN.
Totally agree with that. Maybe how about one other receiver that you want to just touch on real quick that's going to be in your wide receiver article?
Yeah, I talked about Kenny Pickett, talked about how a lot of these players are tied to each other. I mean, Deontay Johnson is just the obvious one. Didn't score a touchdown last year. His expectation was 7. If we look at Matt Harmon's reception perception, Deontay just grades out as one of the best route runners. Matt Harmon's success rate versus man, versus zone, versus different type of coverages. Deontay Johnson just wins. These are the type of players we want on our team. If Kenny Pickett continues to ascend as a passer, Deontay Johnson is going to be the steady player on that team. You know, I know people like Pickens. Pickens has a lot of Gabe Davis attributes. I like Gabe Davis, but I think it's going to be a little more inconsistent than people are hoping for. I know he's sexy. I know Pickens is sexy. Deontay Johnson is that dude in the offense.
Totally agree with that. And from a DFS standpoint, listen, if you're looking at, you know, trying to make a splash with any of these guys, like Steelers, for example, listen, they play San Francisco their first game, and then they're home against Cleveland, but Vegas and Houston in weeks 3 and week 4. So like, just think of from a DFS standpoint, their value was already depressed, right? I mean, TJ's talking about them, but you know, not a lot of people are thinking like these guys are going to be guys you want to put on your DFS teams. But it's going to be even worse after they play San Francisco and maybe after they play Cleveland. But then you wake up in Vegas and Houston, they're low priced. Nobody really wants to play them in spite of their low price because like they're not sexy picks like George Pickens or like some receivers that typically score a lot of touchdowns. And that's sort of how you win a DFS. I mean, if the matchup is right, that's sort of how you win a tournament matchup. I mean, TJ, do you like my logic in terms of like, I can't imagine that the prices are high for Deontay. I mean, Deontay will carry some price value, but like that they're going to be high for Pickett or Deontay in week 3 against Vegas or week 4 against Houston.
Yeah. I mean, we would have to see, you know, we would have to see something huge out of them. And, you know, these are things to keep in the back of our mind, right? These hoping to pop off teams, because, you know, Pittsburgh starts the season against the Niners. All it takes is them to just have a horrible game against the Niners to get absolutely romped. And then all of a sudden everyone's saying, yeah, same old Steelers. And it just presents opportunities. There's no way they're going to be high priced. There's none.
Interesting note that the Niners are favored by 3 at Pittsburgh, but that's at plus 100. So I think some money is at least coming in on Pittsburgh. Something to think about. Speaking of, we talked about the Browns earlier. We touched on them. I just want to put it out there because I tweeted this out earlier. I like the Browns +2.5 at home. I think that could tick up to 3 by the time we kick this thing off. And what would it be? 61 days. But something to think about. I'm big on the Browns this year. So I'm just going to put that out there here in July. All right. Two tight ends. Just give me names, like, and give me sort of like positive or negative before we get to talking about that actual main slate, which is going to be in, again, 58 days. Two tight ends, maybe one positive, one negative, two positive, two negative, whatever it is. A couple names that are going to be in your tight end article.
Yeah, Kittle scored way over expectations. 6 touchdowns expected versus 11 actually scored, and that's tied directly to Brock Purdy, who scored 6 over expectation on just 170 attempts. He usually takes a quarterback, 400 attempts to score 6 over expectations. So they really performed over expectation, those two particularly. Obviously, a lot of mouths to feed there on offense. That's not going to throw a ton. Got CMC there taking a lot of touches. So Kittle gives me a little bit of pause. We already talked about Matthew Stafford. Tyler Higbee only scored 3 touchdowns last year compared to his 6 expected. Higbee's never going to be that sexy pick guy. He's never going to be the guy that we're expecting to give us a tight end 5 season over 17 games. But he's going to give us these random 3 touchdown games, or at least, he has in the past. And who the hell is going to catch balls after Cooper Kupp? Some people like Puka Nacua. Some people are on the Van train. I think Higbee, especially if you're playing boomer bust game especially on DraftKings, where we really play the boomer bust tight end game, I think Higbee could have some random weeks where he's worth throwing darts at.
Absolutely love it. All right. By the way, everybody in the chat, hit the like button if you haven't already. J-Rob, GC, and Team Energy. I see you, Office Depot. Ryan DeRipper, who apparently is the most humble guy in the chat, saying he will own everybody in fantasy football. Graphic 13, thank you, I think, for acknowledging the top button. Listen, we're going to talk about the main slate real quick before we get out of here. But before we do that, let's hear another message from our partners.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the 3 things that make it stand out for me are, number 1, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number 2, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the 3rd thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You don't want to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
And we're back, and this is Fantasy Football Today, DFS Listen. I know it's July 11th, and I know we're quite literally 2 months away from the main slate, but this is fun. This is supposed to be fun, right, TJ? Listen, I know you're in the best ball streets and, Dynasty and all that stuff, so you probably haven't turned the page to DFS yet, but remind us, when do you think pricing will actually come out?
We usually see pricing drop the last couple days of July, first couple days of August. I don't know if FanDuel or DraftKings dropped first, but usually whoever drops first, one follows the other. I don't know if anybody working at either of those places is listening. I've been pounding the table. Tell me what you think about this idea. I think when pricing drops, they should run a tournament that locks when the Hall of Fame game starts. So you set your lineup,
amazing idea.
And then you can't touch it with all the preseason action.
So it's like basically a best ball DFS thing that locks at the Hall of Fame game.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so in. I'm going to clip this. I'm going to have Zach clip this and we'll tag DraftKings on it. Why wouldn't they do that?
I've been asking every year. Let's get this going.
Oh, TJ, what an amazing idea. All right. So listen, speaking of, We have a main slate that has 13 games, as you might expect, week one. Eight games are at 1 o'clock in case you want to play the early game slate or early games slate. And then at 425, they're all at 425, by the way. We have five games. And the afternoon, the 425 games happen. This is Eastern Standard Time, of course, happen to be some of the games that have the higher point totals. Some games that stand out to me. I mean, I'll just tell you that the games with the highest point total, like right now, these totals might change. Dolphins at Chargers. That's a 50-point total. That's the highest on the slate. Again, this is the main slate. The Kansas City game that kicks off this entire season at home against Detroit, that's a 55-point total. That'll be a showdown discussion that we'll discuss when we get closer. The Browns and the Bengals. Browns at home against the Bengals. That's a 47-point total. That's a 1 o'clock game. Rams at Seahawks. We've been talking about the Rams and the Seahawks this entire show. That's a 47-point total. Other notable games, Eagles, who a lot of people are going to want to play, are at the Patriots, 45.5. Bucks at Vikings, 45.5. Texans at Ravens. I bring that up because Texans will probably be some cheap options, and you can play Lamar and stack him or not stack him, whatever you want to do with that. Anything jump out to you? I mean, obviously, Dolphins and Chargers is going to be the game people are going to be focused on. I mean, is that the game you're going to be focused on?
Before I answer that game, there's two things that jump out to me, and they're not game or DFS lineup building specific. They're kind of more theory game selection specific. Two things that let's just pretend we can only play the main slate. Two things that I or play, you know, the full slates, full type yeah. slates, not like these random games. Two things I tell people that can make them the most money on main slate DFS. Split your slates up between, you know, the 8-game and the 5-game slate for this. Mm-hmm. Play early only slate, afternoon only slate. I think there's a lot of value in that just because people are focused on the full 13 game slate, and learn about late swap. And this sets up perfectly for like a crazy late swap game, because all of the chalk is going to be late with these high scoring games. And what that means is that we can play a couple contrarian plays early. And if our contrarian plays hit, it lets us know how chalky or late or chalky or contrarian we could be in these later games. And this is week, I mean, any week it's bad, but this looks like if you're setting your lineup and forgetting it when the 1 p.m. games kick off, you're giving up a lot of equity. So I'd say those two things really stand out to me. I mean, it looks like at first glance that the Dolphins and the Chargers game is going to be the one that everybody is all over, with a lot of people on. I would guess Geno probably ends up being like the popular mid-priced quarterback, with people. Mm-hmm. You know, depending on how salaries fall, that will determine who his popular pass catchers are. But I would imagine that Dolphins Chargers game is going to be bonkers.
And I'm curious for those that are new to DFS. I mean, they certainly were new to NFL DFS. I mean, they certainly understand ownership, and you don't necessarily want to always play the chalk. If you're playing this slate, is yeah. it, hey, I'm going to play that game, but I'm going to get different with how I play it. I know who most of the chalky builds are going to be comprised of. I might dabble there, but I'm going to change it up a little bit so I get pieces of the game that other people don't have. Or is the strategy, and maybe it's both, by the way, or is the strategy, I'm just going to avoid that game. I'm going to take a piece or two, but I'm not going to get any of my stacks in that game. And I'm going to do a stack in a different game, but just grab a couple pieces in the big one that everybody's going to go after.
I'm going to answer it again with a little bit of theory. One thing that I have seen historically is that typically it takes the betting sites, a couple of weeks to get their lines calibrated. And what that means for us is that we can, early in the season, the first 3 weeks, we can find a lot of value in the second tier of whether it be implied totals or game totals. So most, then I will other weeks, I would probably have less of this Dolphins Chargers game, because we can get so much value on these games with the 45, 46 over for the teams with the 24, 25 point implied totals, compared to the 48, 49, 50 game totals, the 28, 29 implied totals. So I think I'm usually going to be a little lighter on these super heavy high scoring week one games.
Any of these games jump out to you where you're looking at it and you're like, that does seem pretty low. Not a lot of people are going to be playing that game. It might be a good opportunity for me to basically take advantage of the bookmakers who probably have a soft line.
Jags Colts seems like the most obvious one to me. you know, Colts assuming we already got some Gardner Minshew chat going on from the Colts that he could be week one, but Anthony Richardson with that Jaguars often sets ascending indoors, which obviously doesn't matter a ton in September compared to December, but 43.5 for that game seems pretty enticing for the over.
It seems low. What's really interesting about that too is I expect, I'm not trying to break news here, it's just my speculation, I expect Gardner Minshew to be the starter week one. I just don't think Anthony Richardson's going to be ready. I know reports from the coaching staff when he was drafted were like, hey, we're going to put him in there right away. But I just personally don't think that's going to happen. And if salaries are coming out in early, or I should say early August, late July, like Minshew is going to be priced a certain way where it wouldn't shock me at all if he's super chalky come kickoff time. Am I crazy here?
No. If we get a 5K Minshew and he ends up being the starter, I mean, at least for cash games, I would assume he would be a mega chalk guy, except unless maybe like a, I don't know, like a Sam Howell comes in super cheap or something.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I'm going to call it, TJ, I'm going to call it right now. Gardner Minshew will be the cash game chalk on week one of the NFL season on the main slate. I'm calling it right
now. Makes sense.
I love the theory you dropped there. That's certainly so. Everybody on FFT DFS, we're going to start to ramp up our shows. We're going to still have our offseason series over the next 3 or 4 weeks, 5 weeks. Then we're going to get into preseason, things of that nature. Mike McClure is going to be back on the show. Other guests will be back with us on the show. But we're going to be talking about a lot of that leading into week one of the NFL season to get everybody super prepared. TJ, looking at this slate, any other sort of nuggets to drop here in terms of maybe what people, not necessarily with this slate in particular, but the game theory you just dropped was certainly super valuable, I think, to everybody listening. Anything else to pay attention to, maybe just early in the season that people can just sort of take? Maybe it's something that like not a lot of people are thinking about. This is something that can kind of get you an edge.
Like I mentioned, I think if you're doing a lot of redraft research, you can take a lot of that information, a lot of the insight into the early season, kind of stick to these, you know, these teams that we might like, the Steelers type breakout candidates, even if they don't hit week one, kind of keep that in the back of your mind that they can be offenses that could pop. Take week one with a grain of salt. You know, obviously it takes 4 to 6 weeks to really calibrate on what we know about these teams. There's a lot of value early in the season and going against what we know after a couple games. Follow the volume, follow the touches, follow teams that are high passing rate over expectation type deals. And then just from a game selection perspective, I mean, when these salaries drop, really digest what all of these sites are offering. Don't feel like you need to enter every contest. Really look at obviously tournaments where everybody's excited about. Really look at these structures. I spend a lot of time tweeting out game structures and you know which games are flat or heavy payouts and depending what you're looking for, you could make a lot of money on game selection alone. Get out of that feature lobby and really dig into these games, and especially in week one. Come Saturday night, Sunday morning, we're going to see contests fill like crazy, right? And then what we see is in that last, which are similar buy-ins, smaller fields, better structures. So save some of your role for that. And obviously we're looking for overlay. So, you know, we're always looking for that. But just these second contests that get released after the featured ones fill up, there's a lot of value in those second contests the last hour before kickoff.
Love that. And I'll tell you what you said about the early in the season alleged trends. I mean, I can't, like, the beginning of the season is always the part of the season I tend to spike the most. I tend to make the most money. It's because by week two, people think they know all the teams. They know all the trends. They know exactly. And by week three, it's the same thing. Week four. And then you start to see things kind of normalize as the season goes on. But please take advantage of that perception that's going to exist going into week one, but certainly after week one, going into week two and week three. That's where you really can really take advantage of some false perceptions there. So TJ, before we get out of here, we know we can find your work at 444.com, and we know we can look for your regression candidate articles, touchdown regression candidate articles, particularly in that wide receiver tight end department. Those ones have yet to be published. Anything else we can look forward to from you on 444?
Yeah, the rest of this regression series should be hitting the site in the next couple of weeks. I just dropped a huge article that's called My Ultimate Guide to Best Ball Mania 4. It gives my step-by-step breakdown to how I'm approaching the biggest best ball tournament in the industry. If you want some more DFS theory, we have called the DFS Strategy Hub. A lot of that content is free. One thing that you could find is my tournament reviews, which kind of breaks down the difference between FanDuel and DraftKings tournaments, what really works in those. So check out the Strategy Hub. There's a ton of stuff in there for free on 4for4.
Absolutely love it. Well, thank you, TJ. That's TJ Hernandez at TJ Hernandez, also at 4for4.com. My name is Sia Najad at Sia Najad. This is Fantasy Football Today DFS. We'll be back with you in a couple weeks to continue our offseason series. Really looking forward to it and really looking forward to this NFL season. We hope you join us. This is Fantasy Football Today DFS, and we'll see you next time.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.